Anyway, thank you very much, Mr. Neth. Good to see you all once again today, and welcome to all those who are on the web. We never know who's watching, as I've mentioned before, so we can have between 15 and this last month up to 30 people listening. Of course, if people get snowed in, they're going to go to the web and pick up a sermon from the hit web, so it's really good that we're able to have that for most of the churches, I think, throughout the United States and even in other parts of the world. Speaking of snow, it was we had 8.5 inches where we were, which is interesting because Colorado Springs, I guess, usually does get less snow, but I didn't realize that we were in such a nice spot to get all of the we actually take the water. Water is so expensive out here that we take barrels, and when it snows, we start shoveling into the water barrel. Actually, it doesn't matter how much you use the water here in Colorado, for those of you who want to move here. And this is a really good spot to move, too. But it seems to be the same no matter how much water we use. It's maybe within $5, $10. So if I take a bath once every 2 weeks or once a month, the water bill is exactly the same. So anyway, I did want to add one thing that I was told this morning by Nathan Guller, and that is, as you know, I didn't know this till this past week or about a week and a half ago, that they wanted to release her on December the 28th from the hospital. The same thing happened with Carolyn Brooks, where they wanted to release her, but it took about 2 weeks to find a rehab place, and she was only rehabbed about 1 week. But with Teresa, the governor, because of so many beds being needed at this time, decided to make a jurisdiction or legislation, whatever you would call it. And basically, if a home opens up, no matter if it's a home you want to go into or whether you don't want to go into, because there are different qualities of rehab homes, as we know, and some are much better than the other. But evidently, the hospital will release you into that home just automatically because they'll need the bed. So she needs care, and it would be best to have a room by herself at all possible, and it'd be best to be checked on and be rehabbed or go through something every day where she's walking, where they're getting her up and trying to move her and starting to use those muscles. So thought I'd pass on the latest legislation. Sometimes it's good with the prisoners. That was really really good, you know, if you hurt badly enough, I guess the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And so that's what's happening, and I'm glad that they make those judgments. Okay. We know in the Bible that there are all types of ways God teaches us. For example, Proverbs is a totally different way than just a story. Story of Ruth, for example. Or God can just give us commandments, and he can tell us what happens if we obey, let's say, Deuteronomy and the curses, or the blessings, or what will happen if we disobey. So God has left no way. I don't think there's another way possible, since God is God, that you could come up with the best forms of teaching and come up with so many different ways. And God knew that we would all be different, that we would be affected by one way better than another. Stories are always good. People love stories. And then there are the straight out, do this, do this, do this, do this. If you don't do this, you get this, this, and this. And others are people, you know, it's just like our kids. Some children, you look at them, give them a dirty look if they're disobeying, and they start crying. Others, you give them a dirty look and they think you're smiling at them. They don't do anything. And you have to, you know, some take one little pat on their bottom and they will straighten up very quickly. And other people take going to your room without entertainment, no TV, you know, no games, no phone. And some don't like that at all. So I don't think we ever sent our kids to their room. We just never did. We just gave them 40 swats minus one. I think that's what the Bible told us to do. Actually, we didn't do that, but God gets to us in different ways is the point. If you'll turn to 1 Corinthians 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we'll see that one way God has done it is to give us examples in the Bible of what's happened to other people when they messed up, so to speak. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verses, let's start out in verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual bread, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. So we have here the Apostle Paul going back to the time the Egyptians were being led out of the land. And we realize here that they came from a culture that certainly didn't help them obey God. They were in a culture that did not obey God at all, the true God. They didn't know the true God. And so when they were brought out because they looked at Moses as the miracle worker, as the one who was going to deliver them. They had forgotten about Joseph, not all of them, but Joseph especially was forgotten by the Egyptian pharaohs. And it had been a long time since Joseph died. So the religion that the Israelites had was not going to the synagogues, picking up the Old Testament and reading whatever they could, the law, the prophets, the writings. Well, they didn't even have that. They had Genesis, maybe. Moses, we believe, wrote Genesis. So maybe at that time they didn't even have something in writing, but they had an oral religion. Joseph would have had an oral religion for sure. So they were completely in a culture that had been influenced by the gods of the Egyptians, many of the gods of the Egyptians, since there was more than one. My sermon today is about influence and how we are affected by things or people or habits, but it is about influence and how that influence affects us spiritually. So we have then these individuals who came out of Egypt, and then it says in verse 5, with most of them God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. When you stop to think of what they went through, you would think that they would be a little bit more impressed than we've been, because they saw all of these miracles. They realized that all of the firstborn children of the Egyptians died, and the cattle, by the way. They saw the sea opening up. And for a lot of us, and me included, I would think that if there were a huge, tremendous miracle that God gave me, some fantastic vision or whatever, that it would affect me for the rest of my life. But you know, that's not the way human nature works. We could be healed, and 5 years from now, it wouldn't affect us. We could go through that same Red Sea, and it would not affect us after a while, because it didn't affect the Egyptians. They must have been so calloused, and we have to remember that there were many who passed their children perhaps through the fire. You read Acts 7 and you see how engrossed they were in the religion of their culture. And you realize how hard it must have been. They were fair weather Mosites. I guess we can't say Christians, but we could in the sense that Jesus Christ was the rock that they followed, it says here. So they were fair weather Christians. As long as everything was going well, then they were amazed and they would obey until something came along that hurt them. We're all that way in a certain sense. You know, we can hear a sermon or we can strive to be a certain way, but when something doesn't happen that we want it, the way we want it to happen, what do? Immediately we go back to square one if we don't watch out. So they were the same way. They had seen these miracles, but they had been so influenced by their society, by their culture, by their religion, that it was automatic to go back to the character that they had. The character was a day-by-day attitude, and some of them were 60 years old, some of them were 50, 40, maybe some in their 70s, and they were all fit, so I guess the leeks and the onions helped as far as their health was concerned, but not as far as their spiritual character. So it says, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Over a period of 40 years, they died. And it came to the point after 40 years that only those who were under 20 or 20 and under, I forget exactly how that went, but anyway, only those were alive. So nobody was there at the end of 40 years, except unless they were 60 and under, based on what we have here. So what are we supposed to learn from the example? Now, they didn't learn from the people dying around them. They didn't learn from the pestilence. They didn't learn from the 23,000 who died, as it says here, from sexual immorality. They didn't learn from that during that period of time, because we know that idolatry took place very early on when they worshiped the golden calf, but they simply didn't learn from the pestilence that came along or just dying from it. So God was not well pleased. Verse 6, these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. We should not become idolaters as were some of them. For as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality, verse 8, as some of them did. And do not tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. And don't murmur. Now, maybe the first two we think, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be an idolater, and I'm not going to commit sexual immorality. Then it goes on to say, nor murmur, as some of them murmured, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, all of these things were for our examples, and they were written for our admonition, on whom the ends of the age, now this was written approximately 2,000 years ago, and they thought, when Paul was writing, he thought this is the end of the age. And it was, because if you take a 6,000-year period, the last 2,000 years is the last one-third, isn't it? So, and Paul, I think, really thought that it was closer than 2,000 years to go. Nevertheless, we are definitely at the end of the age, and these things are written for us. These are our examples. Therefore, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. Let's make sure that we always remember the example we have. Well, today, as I said, I'm giving a sermon on influence. What influences us that would cause us not to stand? Back then, it was their society. It was their culture. We have all come out of I shouldn't say that, because some of us grew up in the church. And that's not me, but I came out of a pagan culture. And many of us have. Some of us were blessed to grow up in the church. And that is a blessing. It really is. I had a tremendously righteous example right in my room in college when I was able to room with one of the most righteous freshmen there, Mr. Neff. Am I getting back on your good side? I think. To go to college, actually, when I went out from the religion that I had and came to Ambassador College, I truly look back at that experience and think, what a wonderful experience. The experience at Ambassador College for the 4 years, although there's, you know, some down times, but overall it was 99% of the time. It was really a wonderful, wonderful environment. And the Israelites could have had that. They could have gone from Egypt. It wasn't that many days to cross and to come into the Promised Land. They were the ones who really, really messed up. So we have a culture, our background, and we're all influenced by the world, so I can't say that it's totally unlike the Egyptians, because we've been influenced by our society. Just being in the world itself, we are influenced. So we're going to take a look at some examples today. First of all, a good example, okay? And some of these will be, actually most of these will probably be not so good examples, because we want to see how we could be corrupted by the environment in which we grow up, in which we live. Ruth, back after the time of Judges, actually this took place during the time of Judges. The book of Ruth follows Judges, and we see the tremendous example or influence, we would say, excuse me, that Naomi had on her daughters-in-law. Let's go to verse 11. Both of the sons had died. We'll pick up the story there. And so she was going to go back home. There was nothing to keep her in the land of Moab. Ruth, chapter 1. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Why will you go with me? Why are you going to go with me? You're raised in the environment of the land of Moab. Are there still sons in my womb?" Now, this is interesting, too, the culture back then. "Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" Now, I suppose these gals were, I would think, maybe at least 30. Maybe it's 25, but still, if they were only 25 years old, Naomi is saying, well, if I were pregnant right now and a baby was born, would you wait and you would be, how old, 40 by the time this young man, if it were a boy, would grow up? Would you wait? And I suppose we could say, well, bad for the young man who's going to marry someone so old, and good for the lady who marries a guy that's so young. But it's interesting, just when you read about that, you kind of get the feeling of the culture itself. Like, well, yeah, they would, sure. They would have, in that culture, perhaps waited for 20 years. Remember when you have Judah, whose daughter-in-law lost her husband, married to one of the sons of Judah, and he said, well, I promise you that when this young man grows up, he will be your husband. And it didn't happen. And of course, we know what took place. And she almost died because of what she did. And he was very ashamed. Well, I don't know how ashamed he would have been for what he did. But still, it was that environment. Well, you just wait for the next one out of the womb. And it was 15 years. So, verse 12, "Now turn back, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourself from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone against me." So they were the ones that lost also their husbands, and she did lose two boys. They lifted up their voices and wept, and notice, Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, and Ruth clung to her. She said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people." So Orpah gives her mother-in-law a kiss and then leaves. It's sad, but she does leave. But Ruth clings to her. She is going to stay. Your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. And Ruth said, and these are the two most famous verses in the book of Ruth. Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following you after you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people are going to be my people and your God will be my God. Where you die, I'm going to die. And where I be buried, the Lord do so to me and more so, if anything but death parts between us. So you see, what happened here was a mother-in-law, and you know the image a mother-in-law has. The mother-in-law was so nice, was so kind, set such a good example that Ruth was going to stay. She had such character that Ruth wanted to follow the God that she obeyed, because she knew that that's what gave her the character. I had a tremendous mother-in-law, so I'm not saying anything against mothers-in-law. I loved my mother-in-law. That's Marion's mom, of course. Her name was Grace. And she would call, and we'd be on the phone for 10, 15 minutes, and Marion would come in and say, "Who are you talking to?" And I would say, "My girlfriend." And we got along so well, and my wife and I got along really well too. But I must say, her mother agreed with me more than my wife even agreed with me. She would always take my side, so you'd never want to get rid of a mother-in-law who always is on your side. But she was wonderful. She had set a wonderful example. Marion always loved her mother and was so glad for the example she set for Marion also. But Ruth was that way. She was an absolutely wonderful mother-in-law. And you can see then the influence that one person was able to give. Did I say something wrong? I saw my wife whisper a sweet nothing, something in my ear. Naomi, did I say Ruth? I probably did. So anyway, Naomi was such a good, wonderful mother-in-law. You would never want another one. So the influence is, like I said last week, if we're around somebody who does not have the same beliefs as we, Ruth did not initially, we can influence them by our actions, by not our communication, but our conduct. And this is what we have to think of when it comes to good influence. If we're around somebody good, then we are influenced in a good way, and we like to follow their example. We have other things now that will happen that will corrupt us. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. And here it tells us that we want to be careful with whom we accompany, the company we keep. In verse 33, do not be deceived. Do not be deceived. No, they're good kids. No, that's a nice person. No, it's fine. It's really good to have really good friends like this one. Do not be deceived. And I'm not saying we can't have good friends who are not in the church. Of course we can. Absolutely. We already get along with our neighbors, and it's good to be good friends with our neighbors. It is. But do not be deceived. We have to be careful how much we are around people who do not believe the way that we do, who do not have the same standards that we do. We have to be careful that we don't allow them to influence us. But it says, evil company corrupts good habits. In the New Living Translation, we have bad company corrupts good character. Bad company. So there is company that is not going to influence you in a bad way. You have people that you can get along with. They're not going to try you to make you do the things that they do. We do know that there are people like that. But at the same time, we realize that if it is bad company, if they're bad, guess which wins over? Bad company. Don't be deceived. Your good company is not going to influence those who have bad company. It's going to be the other way around all the time. Bad company wins out. If they have no concern about how good or bad they are, and if they are outspoken, they're going to influence us, their words are going to influence us, and their way of life will influence us if we're not careful. So bad company, be careful, because it can corrupt. It can corrupt. It's just like Days of Unleavened Bread. We realize we keep those because we realize a little leaven leavens the whole lump. So we have to be careful. Bad company corrupts good character. So what do we find in some of the examples in the Bible? One very well-known one is in 1 Kings 21:25. 1 Kings 21:25. We'll start there, and it says, "There was no one like Ahab." Now, I'm not going to go through the many accounts that we have of Ahab and his wonderful, beautiful, very wise wife. You know, you think of that statement where a multitude of counsel, there's wisdom, a multitude of counsel. But what God means by that is a multitude of wise, righteous counsel gives you wisdom. We can't just go to five people and you're looking for someone to agree with you. Eventually, if you talk to enough people, you will find someone that will agree with you. But it may be bad counsel. So a multitude of counsel from righteous people is very good. But you've got to have the right ones around. There was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do wickedness in the sight of the Lord. So why did he do that? Well, I'm not saying that he would not have done it no matter what wife he married. He certainly could have made the same mistakes. And we do know two birds of a feather flock together, right? So he married someone of like mind. I'm not saying he didn't. We're not going to just say, well, Jezebel was the whole problem, because if Ahab had any moral substance at all, he could have said, away with you, I don't want you. He was the king. He could have had that power unless she got the poison mushrooms on him first. But she could have. She might have done away with him. So he sold himself, it says in verse 25, to do wickedness in the sight of the Lord, because he married a wife that didn't help him at all. Jezebel stirred him up. So we find that influence, where you have someone who stirs you to do more evil. It was bad enough just being Ahab, but now he married someone that was just as bad as he was. And she did not, and evidently he did not have a lot of emotional control. How many times will a king cry because they can't possess a vineyard? Really strong, manly guy, wasn't he? He wasn't. He was weak emotionally, and Jezebel didn't seem to be weak at all emotionally. She was very wicked emotionally. But she stirred him up. If he were angry at something, she made him more angry. If he was upset now to get someone, take revenge, then she was there to stir him up to double that revenge. That's the kind of gal she was. We have to be careful of the influence. Now, I don't look at any of us out here and think of any of you being an Ahab or a Jezebel. Not at all. We know that all of us strive to do what's right. We want to do what's right. But you can see then how someone can stir you up if they're bad company. They can stir you up to do what's wrong. And we'll come back to this Jezebel later on toward the end of the sermon and see that that influence is right. That type of influence has stayed around for a long time. And we will see that it even exists in this society today, in the church. There's an influence that God talks about. So I'm going to go through a few examples. I gave a sermon a few weeks ago, a few months ago, it would be back in June or July, on the five good kings of Judah, and the mistakes that even good kings can make. Well, this one goes into more of the not so good kings of Judah. And we won't take a look at a lot of examples. This one would be the king of Israel. And we could go to the daughter of Ahab. It doesn't say the daughter of Jezebel, but it does say that there was a daughter of Ahab who was not so good. But we're going to take a look at 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 16. 2 Chronicles chapter 15 and verse 16. We'll go through about three examples here or so and see what we have. Chronicles, of course, is after the book of Kings. And we see that the whole series of verses basically surrounds the kings of Judah, the Davidic line, and not the line of Jeroboam. 2 Chronicles, we'll get to it here in a moment. And chapter 15. And starting out in verse 16. 15:16. So it would be good to be in 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 16. Here we go. Now we have a King Asa. Now here's an example of someone who had to do something that he really didn't naturally want to do. How many of you have heard the story of Nero? I think you all know the name. Nero was, some people say it was Nero who was responsible for the death of Paul, and that's all speculation. But whatever the case, the Christians were being persecuted during the time of Nero. Nero was the one who was brought into power by his mother. His mother killed the emperor, the Caesar at that time, so that the 16-year-old son, Nero, could come into power. And then, of course, she wanted equal power with Nero. Nero would not hear of that. So Nero had his mother, his wicked mother, killed. And it is said that when the captains of the guard came, she pointed at her stomach because Nero came from her womb and said, "Thrust your sword through my stomach," as a symbol of this womb is the one that produced Nero. And whether that happened really or not. But Nero got rid of his mother, had his mother killed when she was taking too much power on herself. So here you have Asa, though, and he removed Micah, the mother of Asa, the king, from being queen mother because she was a bad influence. Now, that would be tough. He didn't have her killed, but he removed her from the throne. At least I don't see that he had her killed. But she was one who worshipped the Asherah. She was responsible for keeping the high places around. And he thought, you know, I cannot have my mom sitting as the queen mother. Queen Elizabeth married a German Jew. The Jews have ruled high positions in the world for a long time. We see that from the prophecy in Genesis, of course, that would happen. But he was not trusted to be king. He was never made the king. And he could have been. It wouldn't be unusual for the queen to marry someone and they would become the king. But because he was a German, World War II had just ended not too many years previous, and the English did not trust the Germans. And since he was a German, even though he was a German Jew, he was not going to be trusted. What kind of counsel, what kind of power is this man going to have? Is he going to get rid of the queen and take over as king? So you can see how in the inner workings of the royals, there was a lot of thought that went into how much influence you're going to have. How much influence does Prince Andrew have? I think he just had some of his influence taken away. How many of you have followed that or have seen that? Some of you have. So the point in all of this, brethren, is if there's bad influence, we want to stay away from it, even if it's really, really close, like your own mother or your own father. We have to honor our parents, but at the same time, we don't have to allow them to influence us in a wrong way. We can separate the two. The honor is there, but we don't have to respect their moral decisions their moral counseling. Influence is very strong. The closer it is to us, the more it's going to affect us. We have to be careful. Okay, let's go to another example here, and that is one of Joash in 2 Chronicles 24. Influence doesn't just come, bad influence just doesn't come from one sex, the female sex. We can have good influence and bad influence from men or women. It doesn't matter. 2 Chronicles 24, verses 1 and 2. Joash was 7 years old when he became king, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Now, Jehoiada, remember, was married to the woman who kept Joash safe during the time that Athaliah was killing all of the sons of the king. So Joash becomes king, and Jehoiada has a tremendous good influence on his life. Notice, he did what was right, and then it throws this in, not just by chance, in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. So doesn't that tell us that if you have the right people around you, you could desire to follow their example? And he definitely, that is Joash, definitely was going to follow a righteous example. Now, do you remember how long Jehoiada lived? Well, it was about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we had a man that was in the military, and I think he was one of the oldest, if not one of the last, but at least the oldest vet to die. He died at the age of 112. So don't set your age limit too low, brethren, because the mind will say, well, let's close down. He always said he wanted to be 80. He's 80 now, so he's going to close down. So we don't want to do that. We want to think in terms of 120, and now reading this story about the priest, let's raise our limits a little bit to 130. If he can live that long, we can live that long too. But he ate a lot of those little cabbages, is what happened. So maybe we should set it back to 125. But we go to the next verses then, in verse 15. Jehoiada grew old and was full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old when he died. And that was unusual for those times. Remember, before he died, before he was around, there was a king who died at a good old age named David, who lived 70 years. So this was a time when longevity of that length was not normal. Not that others did not live to be over 70 and over 80. We find Moses, even in the wilderness, that was a few years before David, of course. We find Moses said that 80 was by strength a good period in the wilderness. But notice now, verse 16, they buried him, this righteous priest, In the city of David among the kings, some of the kings weren't even buried there because they were not righteous enough. Because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and his house. Very good influence, both towards Israel and towards his house. Now, after the death, verse 17, of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came. The leaders came. People that you would think would give you good influence, they came, bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. Therefore, they left the house of the Lord of their fathers and served wooden images and idols. You know, if you're around good influence like your parents, we might think, well, you know, here we raise our children. They're with us for 17, 18 years, and they're doing fine. And then they get influence from others, and they may not be so fine, depending on who influences them. They might choose good, or they just might be very independent kids, and they're going to do their own thing anyway. I was blessed to rebel against my parents. The rebellion was toward the Lutheran Church. That was good rebellion. So, but you know, you don't necessarily follow your parents, although when you're around them growing up, it's a good influence. And we might say, well, what did I do wrong? And the answer is, the next question would be, what did God do wrong? I always tell parents, when the children have not stayed where we wanted them, we ask the next question, why didn't God, who would have the best influence, the best example of all, have kids, Adam and Eve, who would follow him? The answer is free moral agency. Everybody gets free moral agency, and God can call, and we all have to accept a certain way of life, but we do have a wonderful, merciful God where maybe 50 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, 10 years later, who knows what a child is going to do. I got something from, we never know who's listening on the webcast, and there was a man who wrote me on an email thanking me for last week's sermon. He lives in Buffalo, New York. I've never met him at all. I did see in One Accord, there we go. I saw in One Accord where he had been baptized a couple years ago. I saw his picture. And I saw the name and I thought, I remember his father. And I remember a story that I was told about his father, who worked in a tire shop, and there was a guy over there and he was working on a big tire and the tire blew up right in that shop and didn't turn out so good. But it was his father who was telling me the story. And so here I get this, and he was not in the church. He grew up in the church. He respected his father a lot, but I think it took him, we left Buffalo, New York in 69. And then that was 79, 89. I almost need two hands for this. 99, 09. And it was almost 50 years later. I'm sure we could say it was 40 years later that this young man who grew up in the church was baptized, 40 years, because he wasn't right away. So when we say, what did I do wrong? God says, well, certainly you weren't a perfect parent. Nevertheless, there was nothing you really did wrong. Your children know that you love them. And so when they leave, it's like the priest leaves or parents are out of my influence zone. And guess what happens? Well, everybody has free moral agency, and we have to choose things. Every child has to prove for themselves. They absolutely cannot follow along just because it's their parents' religion. That would be totally wrong. If we want individuals to do what's right, they have to go to Missouri. That's a show me state. Okay, show me that this is true. Show me. and it's not wrong. Prove all things. We want our children to prove all things. And what happened, as long as there was a good influence, and he didn't have God's spirit, evidently. Joash, this was a king, and he doesn't seem like he was called. He was raised in a right religion. But it's good to see that good influence doesn't mean that it's going to stick. But it also shows good influence helps while we're around. And if bad influence comes in, that can be very powerful too. It just can be. So we have one final one here, and that would be Uzziah, 2 Chronicles 20. Actually, he was a good king. No doubt I mentioned his name back when I gave the sermon on the five righteous kings of Judah. But you have chapter 26, verses 1 through 23. This is Uzziah, and it tells you that it's not only people that influence us, it's something else. In this case, I guess it was winning the lottery, we almost might say. Uzziah won the lottery of talent, the lottery of power, the lottery of anything you would want as the king. Uzziah was a good king, 2 Chronicles 26, verse 1. All the people took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king instead of his father, Amaziah. Then let's go down to verse 8. The Ammonites paid tribute to him, and it says he became exceedingly strong. And Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem, Valley Gate, corner buttress of the wall, fortified them, towers in the desert, verse 10, dug wells, had a lot of livestock. And it's interesting what it says also about this man. He loved the soil. He loved to farm. Maybe he loved to ranch, we could say also. But he loved the vineyards. Verse 11, Uzziah had an army of fighting men. Very, very powerful. Total number of the mighty men, it even gives that 2,600. Verse 15, he made devices in Jerusalem. He was an inventor, or he had men who could invent. And so he had these marvelous military weaponry, I guess we could almost say, that made him so strong. Verse 15, this stuff could shoot arrows and large stones. You know, you see these medieval movies, I guess we would say, and you see them going to war, and you think, well, I wonder if Uzziah was the first one that created that machine, because it could have been. Seems like he was the inventor of something new. Notice verse 16, though. So something happened to him when he was so strong and so wealthy and so skilled. Something happened to him. When he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. And by the way, brethren, do not desire to win the lottery, because it doesn't work out. Money has something to do with the Air Force. Money has wings, okay? It flies away. It doesn't help you any. It's going to go away. And you see these people who win the lottery. I always, when I go by a sign, pick which one I want to win. And I'm very humble. I pick the lowest number. I don't want the $500 million. $200 million is just fine. I don't know about you. But really, you read in Proverbs 30 of what we should pray for. And that is, don't give me too much, because basically I'll be lifted up and think that by my own skills that I have all this. Don't give me too little, lest I steal, right? So don't go out and buy a lottery ticket. You might win. And I've always said, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't be in the church, because they're just, I might deceive myself into thinking, you know, I would give 90% to the church, and I would only keep 30 million myself. That's all. It doesn't happen that way. It doesn't. Don't buy a lottery ticket. I can just say, why ruin your life? Because that's what would happen. Why lose $5? Why lose $10? Why lose $15? So I'm not saying I never have bought a lottery ticket in Montana. My brother made me do it. But my brother Steve, he could be watching, so I'll have to be careful. Steve, I love you. But I don't think he watches this. But anyway, when we were in Montana, we'd spend $1. Greg, you want to go in and throw $1 in on this? And maybe Sharon can throw $1 in. We'll buy $3 worth. We did that a couple times. And I think I had 5 numbers one time. How many numbers are there in lottery tickets? Ah, if you raise your hand, you incriminate yourself. You're buying lottery tickets, right? But it's not going to turn out well. It just is not. So his heart was strong, and guess what? He thought that he could take over a priest's job, somewhat like Saul, remember? Saul decided that Samuel hadn't come, so he was going to offer the sacrifice. This would be about the same thing, because he goes into the temple, and I think, if my memory serves me correct, there were 80 priests came in and says, no, you cannot do this, and he became leprous. You remember the story. What caused him to be this way? It was the influence of power, the influence of wealth, the influence of skill. Anything can cause us to be high-minded, be influenced to the point of being high-minded, where we really get into trouble. So we have to look at these examples in the Bible, and they're there for anything that is written, brethren, is there for our learning, and we don't want to make the same mistakes at all. It's amazing how often in the Bible you see the king humbled himself, and immediately God was impressed, or God was touched, maybe better yet. God was touched. And it is so nice to see that it's humility. It's a pride. If we are proud, take heed, because we will fall. Pride comes before a fall. That should be in the Bible. It is in the Bible. Pride comes before a fall. So humility is when we are blessed. In fact, there was one king who really did well, but the king did not go back to God and give him his retribution, it says. In other words, didn't fall on his knees and thank God for blessing him. We always want to do that. And that comes in the first part of an outline prayer that we kind of follow most of the time, and that is we praise God, honor God, and thank God for all the blessings that we have. Okay, well, let's go on from there to Revelation 2 and verse 20, and then wind it up with a couple more scriptures here. I mentioned that we had in the church influence that was there with the kings of Judah, and it's in Revelation 2 and verse 20. We have in the church in Thyatira, where we see the nevertheless. Nevertheless is not good if it's following something that is righteous and proper that is being done in a church. Nevertheless, you don't want to see that. You won the lottery, nevertheless. You owe Uncle Sam 110% of it. That would be a bad nevertheless. Verse 20, nevertheless, I have a few things against you. And notice, because you allow that woman Jezebel, now remember what Jezebel was like. We didn't go to a full story, but she was the one who stirred up her husband to do evil, who calls herself a prophetess, to teach and beguile my servants to commit sexual immorality and to eat things sacrificed to idols, being there worshiping the idols, no doubt, sacrificing to the idols themselves, not just to eat, but to be a full part of the pagan worship service. And when you have a woman, Jezebel, you can automatically think, is she stirring us up to do evil? Do we have people in the church that would do that? And the answer is, the Thyatira church did, and we are supposed to read what takes place in every single church, because we can't just say, I'm Philadelphia. We are supposed to read to see if we are of Thyatira, if we have any of the same characteristics as Sardis. We want the good characteristics of these churches, but we don't want their bad characteristics. And you see, with all of the churches, there's no, most of the time, something wrong. I think Philadelphia was one of the few. Although it says we got to hang in there, don't let anybody take your crown, which means basically don't let people influence you to go out of the church. Don't let bad influence cause you to say this can't be the church. That minister, that deacon, that member who's been in the church for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, whatever. You know, our kids look at this and the kids hate hypocrisy, don't they? And sometimes that's what may cause us to leave the church. Don't let anybody take your crown. With Thyatira, is there anybody stirring us up? What about to do something wrong? To murmur. Murmur was a part of a problem that they had in the Old Testament, the children of Israel coming out of Egypt, going into the wilderness. That was one of the problems they had, murmuring. Do I have anybody in the church that is causing me to murmur? If we're being stirred up by someone, could we say we have a Jezebel in the church? Can we say we want to be careful of being a Jezebel? And I don't want to take this too far, because I don't want us to say, well, they got me mad, therefore they're a Jezebel. We can blame it on them. So we don't want to take something happening like they made me do it. I'm not trying to say that, because all of us can. How many of us haven't murmured about something? I think all of us have. I have. And my wife is really good at reminding me, and I'm good at reminding her. We help each other as to what we're supposed to do. So again, we're not the practicing Jezebel at all. But let's take a look at the fact that there will be Jezebels, and it calls a prophetess. Notice this, who calls herself a prophetess. Will there be prophets who come along that are not prophets of God? During the end time, maybe this one is for the end time. Because we see in Matthew 24 that there will be people who come along and say that Jesus Christ is the Christ, but they're really not following him. So we have to be careful of wrong influences, is all I'm saying here. Because if there's that stirring up, and she was practicing it all her life, we have to be careful that we're not influenced in the wrong way. We have to be careful of that completely and totally. So what do? Well, we choose. I won't go to Deuteronomy 30, but we have a choice to make all the time. We do. And we will go, though, to 1 Corinthians 6, because we have a choice when it comes to what is good, what is bad. And I think Paul puts it very well concerning the influences we have. We have TV, movies, media. And, you know, I'm amazed when I... have you noticed that once in a while when you listen to the news that the subject of Omicron, whatever it is, I am absolutely shocked. I opened my mail on December 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, December 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, January 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th. And lo and behold, there's Omicron. You know, there's all types of this stuff that can stir us up. Maybe that's Jezebel. You know, just the news, I'm saying, not the flu itself. But just the news. we are influenced so much by what we see. And brethren, remember that anything that goes into our ears, that goes into our eyes, anything we smell, we have a brain that has the capacity of all the computers in the entire world. And you will remember every good scene, every bad scene, every word that is spoken. It's there in our brain. It is there. And all of that's influential. We can see why David said, create in me, renew in me a right spirit. Because we want a powerful spirit that overpowers all of the bad influence we've had. We've had bad influence when we were kids. We had bad influence with other children, teenagers. All that is there. And we don't want that to affect us. We have to have the mind of God. And this is basically what this scripture says here in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 12. So let's read it here, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. Now, what's he saying is we can be influenced by something that is not going to be helpful to us. Be so into eating right that it's all lawful, it's all good food, it's all fine, but you could even make something that is lawful not helpful because it has power over you. Notice it says all things are lawful, all lawful things that are lawful, okay? And some people take this to say it doesn't matter. All lawful things are lawful. All things are lawful to me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. We want to be careful what influences us. Too much of a good thing could influence us. You could be a Dallas Cowboy fan. None of you are Dallas Cowboy fans. And that could influence you to the point that you would be really upset and think that they're the Dallas Cowgirls, or something like that. Or the Kansas City Chiefs, better yet. Or the Broncos. I hear they have a terminal disease. It's called quarterback disease. You know, you read all of this stuff. But the point is, brethren, we can let, and I've seen myself with Kansas City Chiefs, I know nobody on the team. Nobody on the team has given me any money. If they do good, it doesn't make me better. And yet, I can get attached if I'm not careful. We've been all over the world, all over the United States, not all over the world, but we've been in many, many cities, as most ministers have been. And so, if we've been in Pittsburgh, Buffalo, New York Jets, New York Giants, in Texas, Houston Oilers of years ago, and what do they call them now? Houston Texans or something like that. But anyway, all of these things can influence us, and we can be affected by it. We can be upset. We can get irritated. And if we're getting irritated over something that's lawful, like which gladiator we wanted to win, which cowboy player or which Chiefs player we wanted to win. I don't think the Christians ever went to the stadium in Rome. I would think they didn't, unless they were forced to. But what I'm saying is something can be lawful, but also have an effect on us and influence us to the point that we do not have the mind and the Spirit of God. Because this is where it goes when it goes to verse 15. It's talking about, of course, harlotry and sexual immorality, but we're speaking in principle here. Verse 17, he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. If we even doing something or following something lawful can be a good habit, actually, a good habit that we take too far. It could be exercise. It could be, you name it, anything that we do in life that is lawful. And we now, we make it idolatry. We have to have a spirit of God. And if it's not following joy, peace, good patience, goodness, meekness, okay, self-control. If it doesn't follow that, then it's not going to be good. It's had even something helpful can have a wrong influence over us. So we have to be really careful. Choose what we want to do, how much we want to do it, this lawful. Be sure that we are influenced properly and we stay close to God with the mind and spirit of God. So I hope this is helpful. There's many, many things we know that are influential that we would not even want to stay close to. We would want to run away from it. But there are also things that are lawful, and we even have to be careful of those. So let's make sure that we are influenced properly. Let's be sure that the company we keep, no matter if it's people or things, does not corrupt us so that we miss out on the big plan of being in the kingdom of God that God has for us.